As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I am Joe Devine and I'm joined now by Alex Stewart.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. And Seb Stafford-Bloor.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. Today we'll be talking about a few different things. Firstly, our fantasy football teams, because it's the international break and we figured it would be a good time to do that. But hey, it's entertaining because that pivots into a conversation about actual footballers. Here's some of the footballers that we discuss. West Ham's defence generally, including Ryan Fredericks and Cresswell as well. Also Villa, Ollie Watkins we discuss. Grealish and Barkley. We talk about Trezeguet, Martinez. Then we move on to Brighton. We talk about Neil Mopay. There's a bit of an artistic experiment as part of that segment too, which is very exciting. Rave reviews. Then we move on to Spurs. We talk all about Harry Kane. And I realise now we just forgot to talk about Ashley Westwood. But we'll do that next time there's an international break, which is in November. But before you get to listen to what we have spoken, I would like to inform you that you should visit theathletic.com/TIFO. And sign up for £1 a month as part of an introductory offer that we are currently offering. And hey, guess what? There's a new columnist working here at The Athletic now. Do you know who it is, Alex?
Yes.
Would you like to tell the listeners who it is?
It's Alan Shearer.
It's Big Daddy Alan. Big Daddy Alan's in town. He's going to be writing some columns and with real genuine insight. And hey, who doesn't want to hear from the person who scored the most Premier League goals of all time? I know I do. So visit theathletic.com/TIFO to dig deep into the burrow of good content and enjoy the rest of the episode as I leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Joe Devine, the best Joe Devine. Okay, let us begin with discussion of our fantasy football teams. We told everyone that we'd keep you updated. We figured that the international break was a good time to do that because I don't know about you, Alex, or you, Seb, but I have literally no idea what's happened since the last Premier League game week. If I hadn't turned the telly on by accident when England were playing Wales and Calvert-Lewin was scoring a header, I wouldn't have even known what the fixture was. So it feels like a good time to talk about fantasy football. Seb, I think I know that you are placed worst of the three of us. Would you tell us how many points you have at this point and what your team looks like, what the successes and the weaknesses have been?
I tell you what, I'm going to start with successes because it's a much, much shorter list. And I very loudly and very publicly tell anybody who will listen that my team includes Son Heung-min and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Obviously,
Did you have Dominic Calvert-Lewin from the first week?
I've had both of them from the first week, yeah.
Okay, well, see, that's a good thing. Claim extra credit for that.
Well, and also, if I leave it there, then most people would think I'm probably, you know, nationally in the top 10.
Which is what I thought. Until you told me about the rest of your team.
Yeah, because then you also find out that I've got Ender Stevens, Lewis Dunk, Adama Traore and Raul Jimenez. Jimenez has scored, but Traore has started very, very slowly. Lewis Dunk, yeah, Brighton are conceding some goals. They have won the clean sheet, but obviously the big surprise is probably Sheffield United. Nil points so far.
Nil goals, right?
Nil goals, and they've got one goal. David McGoldrick scored at Arsenal. Alas, I do not have David McGoldrick in my side, but I do have Ender Stevens, and I have not had much production from either fullback at the moment.
Tell you what, that was a nice goal, wasn't it? I remember it now.
Very nice goal, but for the sake of fantasy football, it did not matter to me.
And how many points do you have overall?
In total, I have 186.
Okay, I'm very much looking forward to the next international break to see if I can make an even bigger gap. Alex, let's go to you. Tell us about your successes, your failures, and your overall points.
Overall points, I'm on 195. Mm-hmm. I know.
I just want to point out that, you know, you're the guy who knows everything about football.
Yeah, I don't know. The first time I've ever played fantasy football, though, and I keep forgetting to do stuff. Uh-huh, So I've had Salah from the beginning, who's on 41. I've had Calvert-Lewin from the beginning, who's on 37. And Alex McCarthy as a goalkeeper is on 17, which is quite good, I think. Mm. The failures, I started off with Ben Davis and Doherty. Which is not ideal, but I got rid of Doherty and I brought in Lamptey and Cassinier. This last week was bad because I had two Liverpool defenders, obviously, and they didn't do so well, which I would argue is kind of a surprise.
Also, one was your captain, I think.
Alexander Arnold was your captain. Yeah.
Can you just confirm for me that minus points are doubled when you have
a captain? It does appear so, yes. So that's good. Che Adams, who is, I don't know, Che Adams is not on a huge number of points. He got two for me this week, but I am convinced, in the same way that Ralph Hasenhüttl is convinced, that Che Adams will finally realise his potential as a goal scorer. I think he's got one assist so far, which was quite nice, but he's gonna explode at some point. He has to explode at some point. Yeah,
he has to. That's how combustion works.
It just, I guess the thing with fantasy, isn't it, is that there's so much about, well, part of it is luck, because as we'll come on to talk about, I think like there are people who suddenly do stuff that no one expected, and I can't imagine that anybody is genuinely savvy enough to have selected some of those players. But also that, like, if you have Che Adams until his hot streak, you're down on points, aren't you? And then it's about knowing when that's going to come good and then getting him in. I just find it all very confusing.
No, you're right. It's just in your bones, Alex. I think some of us have football in our bones and some of us don't. And that's in our Excel spreadsheets. Some of us have it in our Excel spreadsheets. Other of us just know. We just know. Because tell you what, I'm going to tell you about my team. I've got 209 points. I'm not a huge distance away from you, either of you. But I don't have what's a great team, I don't think. I haven't got any of the very expensive players. What I did was I tried to spread across teams that I thought were going to do well, and also I tried to Magnus Carlsen it and pick players that I thought fewer people otherwise would pick. And now I've kind of been caught up with, because, you know, as they have done well, people have selected them. A good example is James Rodriguez, who actually started the season with not a huge number of people having selected him. I thought it was obvious that he was going to perform exceptionally well, and perform exceptionally well he has. My disappointment in my team
is the smuggest segment of this podcast I've ever heard.
Yeah, I knew it was going to happen, and it was good.
Having looked at Hammers, and we did that video on him and everything, what I wasn't expecting him to do was contribute assists, because I thought he would play deeper. And
when they've got better players playing forward. I mean, there's no way you buy Hammers Rodriguez for Everton and then you play him deep enough that he doesn't contribute assists. This is no way. Also, they brought in Alan and Decore, so that was never going to happen.
I know.
I know more about football than you. Kai Havertz has been my big disappointment so far. I was hoping that he would come in and hit the ground running. I think that's perhaps a symptom of Chelsea not doing particularly well overall either. And I would feel worse if I had Timo Werner, because I feel like that he's threatened to be excellent in many more games and just hasn't quite made it. Havertz scored that hat-trick, of course, but it wasn't in the Premier League, so I didn't get those points. I have had to recently make my third substitution, which it was driven by one injury to Alisson. So I've replaced Alisson with Martinez, and also Anthony Martial and his red card. He hadn't really done much for me beforehand either. In fact, my two Man United players, Martial and Fernandez, both haven't really done a huge deal for me. So finally, I did bring in Harry Kane, who I think is top of the striking list. I felt like I was missing that big, powerful striker. But this is why I like the game, because I feel like I started without any of the hot prospects. I didn't have Kane, I didn't have Aubameyang, I didn't have Salah, I didn't have Mane, I didn't have your kind of traditional top hitters, and yet here I am, first of the three.
Here I am. You know, while we're talking about disappointments, I want to take issue with some of the advice that we sourced from The Athletic, actually, because I'm pretty certain a couple of months ago we had James McNicholas on the pod telling us that William Saliba would be the cornerstone of the new Arsenal defence. Into my fantasy team, William Saliba went, and not even a minute's worth of football since.
Well, that's what you get for selecting uncertainty, isn't it?
I've made a season-long commitment, and he will stay as my third substitute until such a point when he becomes useful.
I had Ruben Venegra at Wolves, who I think is
old.
He's a great left back. He's a really exciting player, and he's gone on loan to Olympiacos, which is hardly a vote of confidence in him or my selection of him.
I tell you what Alex might be good at is picking a fantasy team that if someone picked it in 5 years' time might win, but definitely not this year. Do you know what I mean? It'd be interesting to have the same team again and see how those points fared. Well, anyway, very interesting. We'll see if I can maintain this distance, this current victory, this affirmation of my superior football knowledge by the time we return for the next international break.
You know what?
I think maybe we can.
I think we were just adding quickly, because I've just been looking at other performers in the TIFO League, and Joe, you're technically in third place behind
Ali. What's that? Sorry. No.
Yes, you
no,
are.
No. Yes, I'd rather we didn't talk about that.
We are going to, because we're going to introduce new characters to the podcast. Ali, who does our social media, is leading the way with about 230-something. And in second place...
So Ali, who we just hired?
Yeah.
Well,
so, you know, I'm sure he's still within his probationary period, so maybe, you know, I'm sure there can be some kind of mutual termination there. Unfortunately, Henry, who is more of a long-term employee, designer...
Henry
is in second.
What? Yeah. But he will have just picked the best players. He's cheating. He's playing the game the way all of the kids play the game, right? Who's he got in his team?
I can't tell you between game weeks at the moment. I can only tell you how he's performed. Or I haven't worked out how to find out.
How many has he got? How many points has he got?
223.
Has anyone tried the strategy of lumping in on like four players that cost a shit ton of money and you know are going to get points, and then otherwise just picking substitutes who are only going to get zero rather than minus?
I haven't really employed any sort of strategy.
Does that sound like a terrible idea?
I think that's a bad idea. I think the idea is to have like one or two big players, and then... And because the thing is, like, if you have a good defence, I know defence isn't the priority area in fantasy football at all. And if you're good enough at swapping out your players and catching on the end of hot streaks and stuff with strikers, then you're all fine. But I like to have a good defence because I feel like you get consistent points every week. If you play three defenders, for example, and they all get clean sheets half the time, that's an additional 18 points every week. And when you consider that in some weeks you're only really getting 40 points, that's half your points. I mean,
people who are getting like 160.
Yeah, but that's because Mohamed Salah scores a hat trick and then make him a captain. Like that's just luck.
It's all just luck.
Or is it luck? You know,
it is all.
I honestly think like picking Salah, picking Kane, which I've just done, picking Aubameyang, who is a midfielder in this game, is cheating. That's what I think. I think we should have a league next season where none of us are allowed to pick players that are over the value of 10. Because it's just cheating, because they're better. And as the video that we made about this said recently, they're not priced highly enough for them to be that valuable in the game, even though they're clearly so valuable in the game. I feel like it reduces the amount you have to actually think about it. So that's why I'm so pleased that today I am ahead, obviously, quite, you know, by some distance. Very, very impressive performance by myself. Because I feel like, you know, I've only just brought Kane in.
You're sounding more and more like you're Boris Johnson.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I think it's, you know, we've got here, we've got Seb, who has a long history of match reporting, has been a journalist, you know, travelling around the country and indeed around the world for the last sort of, you know, decade or so, and has done a lot of reading, knows a huge number of people. Personal friends with Henry Winter, I'd like to say, as he always mentions to me every other day. And Alex Stewart here, you know, the font of knowledge, right? I mean, that's how he sells himself. He's the sort of king of everything that is knowing all of the things about football. And guess what? Little old me is leading the league. Without picking a superstar, unlike you two cheaters. Anyway, I feel like that's enough of that. It's quite enough. Let's move on to talk about some surprises from this season so far, unexpected successes so far.
Joe in fantasy football probably ranks quite highly on that list, I'd say.
It wasn't unexpected where I'm sitting.
Okay.
So I think this is nice because it kind of fits with the idea of what we just said. So let's talk about our two or three surprise successes of the season so far. And then as Alex writes here in the plan, I can take the piss about how we've not selected them in our fantasy football leagues and are in fact doing quite badly. Speak for yourself, Alex. Speak for yourself. I want to start by coming to you, Alex, to discuss West Ham's defence, because you've written here that Ryan Fredericks has more shot-creating actions per 90 than any defender with over two games played and is sixth of all PL players plus one match played.
Yes, and also Cresswell, Masuaka. I have to be honest, West Ham are not a team that I really ever pay enormous amount of attention to, because they seem to sort of... they're a bit chaotic. The selections are hither and thither. Moyes, I think, took a while to kind of bed in. But particularly that 3-0 result away against Leicester, you know, the Leicester that had just dismantled Manchester City. The one Moyes wasn't at, Alan Irvine was. But, I mean, we can assume that Moyes is picking the team, right? Can we assume that? Maybe.
I think so.
Maybe that's the surprise. It's all Alan Irvine. But they, you know, they looked really impressive. There's this very compact low block with five at the back, which allows the wing-backs to push forwards on the counter-attack. Declan Rice looks like a different player for West Ham than he does for England. He's more progressive in his passing. He's better at carrying the ball forwards. Souchek has been fantastic. And I think part of the reason that West Ham defence is playing so well is because they have a genuinely good double pivot in front of them in Rice, who's more of a holder, and Souchek, who's more of a box-to-box midfielder. And then they've got this pace out wide with Fredericks. Koufal played, I think, against Leicester, but the point still stands. And they're just looking quite good. You know, they press high, they press aggressively. Fornells particularly is good at that, but also Mikel Antonio. So it's very much a kind of defend from the front and then spring forwards. And against Leicester, it was hugely successful. But that's a surprise to me.
I think many people expected that West Ham would be relegated this season, because it just seems kind of season after season those adjustments aren't made. But Seb, talk to me a little bit about West Ham, because in fact something interesting came out of a discussion we were having last night. We are working on something relating to the new proposition from Manchester United, Liverpool, and Rick Parry to change the structure of English football, quite significantly so. There is, as part of this, a new rule which says that, would say, if it ever came into effect, that the nine teams that have been in the Premier League for the longest period of time consecutively would have special voting rights. West Ham happened to be one of those teams, along with Everton, Southampton, I believe, and the Big Six. What struck me yesterday, and by the way, I do not direct this at all at West Ham United supporters, who I feel immensely sorry for a lot of the time, but if this were to happen, and there's certainly no reason to say that it definitely will do, but if it were to happen, I just feel like West Ham have been so lucky to walk into that big stadium, which theoretically increases the value of the team overall, right? Not to say that that's a lucky thing for supporters who don't seem to particularly enjoy it. but also, you know, if this proposition were to go ahead, also to walk into a special voting benefits for having a team which the ownership seems to do a quite poor job, in my opinion, of aiding in almost any way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's almost quite generous, Joe. The stadium is the worst football stadium I've ever been to. It's okay. Truly terrible. And West Ham fans would say to you, they were sold the dream. The Athletic actually did some really good, really did a coverage of the decade under the current ownerships and what has been achieved and what was promised and what the fallout has been as a result of the disparity between those two things. They would be very fortunate, but I think that what seems to have, you know, obviously we talk about what they pay for the stadium, what they pay to occupy the Olympic Stadium. And their potential to kind of drift into one of those long-term stakeholder positions should that proposal come to pass. What I think West Ham fans would say to you is that they have actually traded away an awful lot to get those things.
No, I completely agree with that.
No, I know you know that. I just the thing about them is that West Ham, to me, they're almost a club without a trajectory. They are a club who each year they get to a transfer window and... up until very recently, they would try and sign the most famous player they could afford, regardless of whether that player was really a particularly good fit for the club or the side. They do baffling things like they trial a director of football model, but they allow a head coach to essentially appoint his own boss. And then when it doesn't work, you hear one of the owners talk about how, you know, a director of football system just doesn't work, so we've gone back to just, you know, give it to David Moyes for a couple of years.
Right.
There's no order. There's no. There's
but this no... is what I think I mean. I think I mean that the ownership have been exceptionally fortunate and would be exceptionally fortunate if this were to happen. The stadium, from a fan's perspective, obviously is closer to a disaster than it is a success. But the stadium does increase the value of the football club, and that just fell into the laps of those owners, right? As this proposition could also do.
Absolutely, and also if you look at some of the clubs that are not on this list, some of the shorter term inhabitants of the Premier League, and you examine some of their processes, I think I probably would reference someone like Brighton, for instance. Do Brighton as a football club make a lot more sense than West Ham? Yes, definitely. Because the way they do things seems to come with a degree of logic, which has so far been absent at West Ham. So yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that what I will say would be scant consolation to any West Ham fans, because I don't think I've spoken to a West Ham supporter who likes the London Stadium experience or who wouldn't, given the opportunity, go straight back to Upton Park. I have endless sympathy with them for that. Additionally, things like long-term partnership stakes and being a long-term stakeholder and also having kind of guaranteed voting rights. I mean, they're good things. I mean, you'd want them. Whether you care about them as a fan, I don't know. And also, like on the footballing stakes, we've drifted a little bit. Like West Ham has surprised me too. That Leicester result was absolutely stunning. The Wolves game the week before, I think people watched it and thought, okay, this is one of those oddities that the Premier League was at that point. Prior to the Villa Liverpool game, it was still throwing up strange results and kind of performances that you thought were kind of being overly influenced by fatigue. But actually, you look at what has been done and the way West Ham are playing, and it suddenly looks a lot more credible. It's very dangerous saying things like that about West Ham, because you know within a week or two, with a little bit of hubris, with an owner talking on social media, getting all boasty, as has happened several times in the past, that there's never not a 5-0 battering around the corner. But at the moment, yeah, I agree with Alex. I think it looks healthy, which is a really strange thing to say about a club that off the field, you know, there are still supporters protests going on. Well, there would be if people were allowed to gather. There's still a lot of very strong anti-board sentiment hanging around. And yet, the team is playing brilliantly.
Well, let me ask this. I mean, a team that wins two of its first four games, 6 points already, presumably the aim for West Ham before the season began would have been to avoid relegation, right? I mean, that's a realistic aim. It's a good start, right? I mean, like how often do you see teams that do end up being relegated getting results like this early on?
Well, it can sometimes happen. I feel like because of the nature of this season, it's a little bit of a trick question, isn't it? Because everything, all of the wisdom that we've gathered over the last few years, over the last few decades even, doesn't really count for anything because you can't trust any of these sequences. Yeah, everything is a little bit mad. What I'd say is that I don't think I've seen anything above pitch level that convinces me that something silly can't happen at some point.
That's
quite a West Ham quality. Maybe fans won't like that, but I think it's fair that there is always, defeat can always be found from the jaws of failure, from the jaws of success even. Jaws of victory. Fucking hell, I've battered that, haven't I?
I think it's fine. I like that the listeners get to hear how you cut something.
Let's try and be a bit more elegant with that. They can fuck things up. That's how I put it. That's my notes there. That's as concise as I can be this morning.
I think that's about right because I just spent a while scrolling down the TIFO Twitter feed to find our Premier League predictions. Seb, I hate to say that you placed West Ham in 20th place. So there's
still have confidence in that. That's my William Saliba. That is
Alex in 19th. Alex in 19th. And I'm the only person who didn't. I put them at 17th. So I thought West Ham were going to say, and just to say again, one more time, I am the best person here. And let's move on to talk about Aston Villa.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Alex, I was delighted to see that this had entered into the plan. Aston Villa, Ollie Watkins, second only to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, the god, for non-penalty XG per 90. Jack Grealish is mentioned here too. I'll let you go through those stats. But the one I'm pleased about is Martinez having the best post-shot XG plus minus in the league. Because when I removed Alisson due to injury from my fantasy team, I brought Martinez in from the eye. And then when I read your thing, I thought, hey, my eye is like Alex's thing.
Yeah. Your eye is like my thing.
That's right. That's
I don't really know what to do with that.
Yeah, I'm a master of words.
I think this whole conversation is caveated, like Seb said, with the fact that, you know, this is the oddity season. If last season wasn't odd enough with the way that it finished, the way that this one has begun, with this insane number of goals per game and so on, it is particularly unusual. And there is literally nobody on earth who foresaw the 7-2 result. I think, obviously.
Well, that's... I wonder what kind of odds you would have got on that if you were that way inclined. Must have been,
I don't know. I mean, it would have been shorter than Leicester winning the title when they did, but probably not by much. But you know, the thing with Villa is that we looked at Villa last season. In terms of what they needed to do to avoid relegation. And the thing with that Villa squad was that there was a lot of passive defending going on. There seemed to be a bit of a disconnect between the defence and the midfield because the defence naturally wanted to drop back and protect themselves because Villa were getting battered quite regularly. But in people like John McGinn and Jack Grealish, Villa have really good creative attacking players. And I think what's happened this season is that the defence has pushed up a little bit further with Martinez giving extra confidence. That really is a phenomenal signing by Villa. Douglas Luiz has started to really kind of fulfil the promise that he showed early on. Tyrone Mings is a very solid defender. And then ahead of that, with Grealish particularly, you've got somebody who can always do something fun. You know, he's the most fouled player in the league already again. He wins the most fouls in the final third. He's contributing, you know, shot creating action, goal creating action. He's just a fantastic player. And then with the acquisition of Watkins, and I think this is the sort of difference where we were quite down on Villa last season, I think, at the beginning, and got some criticism for that. But what they've done is they've taken a squad that had some outstanding players and a few solid ones. They've added quality in quite an astute way. I mean, Watkins was a player that was linked with quite a few of the lower-end Premier League clubs, and Villa were able to get him. Martinez, obviously, a good signing.
Ross Barkley, too.
Ross Barkley I'm slightly less convinced by, just on the basis that I think, you know, he adds an option, certainly, but I think if Grealish and McGinn are fit, they're the kind of go-to guys, and Douglas Luiz is not going to be displaced from that team. But
I don't know, man. I mean, I watched Barkley and Grealish play together in that Liverpool game, and they looked like they clicked immediately. They felt like I really felt like I was watching a new partnership brewing. I'd be very surprised if Barkley doesn't start their games.
Barkley's an oddity, isn't he? Like, I don't pretend to know a huge amount about him overall, and not followed his career in the same way maybe that Seb has, but he seems like somebody who can do a number of things quite well without being necessarily outstanding at any of them. He is quite a good ball carrier. He's quite a dynamic player, and he was surprising for Chelsea. I think last season he was a very high contributor in XG chain. So he was part of moves that developed into good shooting opportunities, but not necessarily sort of right around the box and you know, playing the final pass or assist or what have you. So he definitely does contribute stuff. I'm just not entirely sure what it is.
Seb, Ross Barkley?
Interesting. Always someone that's kind of been in the wrong place at the wrong time. So his move to Chelsea probably happened a couple of years too late. Also happened after a very serious hamstring injury. What I like about Villa is that it's the right home for him at the moment. He needs to be, he's always needed to be somewhere where he can be aggressive because he is he's a vertical ball carrier. He wants the ball at his feet and he wants to be expressive with it. I really like the idea of, because what I think will happen is, I think we'll see kind of the shape that that he used against Liverpool, like that sort of McGinn, Luiz, Barkley triangle in the middle of midfield, but then Grealish playing from the left. What I like about this is that it takes some of the attention away from Jack Grealish, because Grealish is a creative player, lovely ball carrier, yes, but he's a wonderful playmaker too. If you add Barkley into that, so you've got long range shooting threat, dribbling ability, good passer of the ball, maybe not as reliable as a passer as Grealish, but just another outlet like that. All of a sudden, you're giving any defenders who play against Villa a slightly different look, another set of problems to deal with, because what you can't do is you can't just sit and double Grealish. I know some people find Barkley a little bit underwhelming, and yeah, he can fluctuate with his form. At the same time, he's still a really gifted player and someone that can hurt you. And I think that's what makes it smart. I mean, it worked for everyone. I mean, it worked for Chelsea because Chelsea aren't really interested in him anymore. They need him to play. Barkley wants to play for England, and the only way he's going to do that is if he's involved every week. And I think pairing, it's not a pairing because it's not a true combination, but there is a little bit of, there is a little bit of the sort of the partnership sort of feeling about that Grealish.
There's several 1-2s against Liverpool were just, they honestly felt like they played with each other for a year.
Absolutely.
Already. It was cool to watch.
It really was. It was really fun to watch. And I'm trying to stay clear of reading too much into what was a really, really strange game of football.
Yeah.
But it was really hard not to be encouraged. And I think...
didn't Jack Grealish look really happy about it as well?
He seemed to enjoy himself. I like what they do with Watkins at the top of formation too. I think there's a future here. I know it's not going to be 7-2 every week. I understand that. But I felt like one of the big problems for Villa last year was the not having enough sources of creativity. That among other issues, let's be fair. Alex did a really good video on some of the defensive issues towards the end of last season, which a lot of those things remain true now. But I think they've solved a couple of problems, and I think it's a really smart pickup. And I want to see him become the player that he could have been. I know it's a little bit late in the day. He's not going to be the next Paul Gascoigne. We know this. But there is still something very watchable about Ross Barkley, and I think Villa Park could be a great theatre for him.
Also, as Alex said, This has turned into an unbelievable transfer window for Villa, who mainly didn't lose Jack Grealish in the way that everybody expected 6 months ago that they might have done. And perhaps coronavirus is to thank for that, or maybe it's just other teams, you know, not being quite in the right position. But also bringing in the players that we've listed. I mean, they have to have had one of the most successful summer windows going. Sorry, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, what you've just said dovetails neatly with that, because I was going to mention Matty Cash as well. You know, I think in Matt Target, Villa had a very serviceable attacking left back who obviously came from Southampton. And they've now added another good one in Cash on the right hand side, who's young, dynamic, can also play as a wide right midfielder. I think has also played in central midfield as well. And you can see Villa's one of those squads where you can see just looking at the lineup roughly how they can play on the basis of who they've got and what their strengths are. And I think there's, you know, it's quite a young squad as well still. And in terms of that sort of ability to bed some of those players in over the course of this season, and then, you know, I think on the basis of what we've seen so far, they should be fine, right? But there's definitely, like Seb said, there's a future there. There's the ability to, if the core of this squad is kept together, then Villa could start to become really quite impressive. I agree, 7-2 is a flash in the pan. But at the same time, when you're bringing in younger players who clearly excel at certain roles and you can see what the system's going to be, you can see what the style's going to be, that does bode very well on the pitch, but also points to, you know, some sensible thinking off the pitch.
I tell you what, we think 7-2 is a flash in the pan until they go to the King Power Stadium and smash Leicester 7-2. Hey, hey, happening on Sunday, 19:15. Anyway, let's go away for a minute. And when we come back after that minute, we will talk about Brighton.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We are back. Can highlight the video, Alex says. You know, when Seb writes me a planner, it's much more for me to read, whereas this is just... this doesn't help me. But
all
you
I
tell me out loud
out
now what you
we.
Wanted to say.
So Brighton, obviously, you know, they've lost against Everton and United, but they are sixth for XG difference despite being 15th in the table. And we've got a Brighton video coming out where I look at a few of the things that they're doing slightly differently. Seb mentioned Brighton earlier as an example of a club who are well run off the pitch. And again, I think the way that they are playing, the integration of some of these signings that they made last season, I think, with particularly Alzate and Lamptey. Graham Potter as a young, interesting coach. Brighton are really, really good. They're playing with a great deal of fluidity. Ben White coming back from a stellar season at Leeds has really added something both to the side defensively, but also in terms of how they progress the ball. His ability to move into the wide spaces frees Lamptey up to push forwards and be exciting. Trossard is another good signing from last season who's bedded in well and has created this really lovely fluid front three with Neil Morpé, who's having a fantastic start to the season, and Aaron Connolly. Brighton are great. They're a really fun side to watch without necessarily any kind of, you know, massive name players. They've not, you know, they're not the sort of a team of household names, but there is something very, very good happening there, I think.
I tell you what I would like to do is I'd like to try something for you now where I try to express how the way that I think Neil Mopé plays, only using the word Neil Mopé. What do you think about that? Okay, I'm going to need silence to do this. But this is how I.
This is
how
something
I
you should have told us about before we started the podcast.
This is, well, hey, give me a plan with some gaps in it, and this is what happens.
This is like Jazz Odyssey from Spinal Tap.
I'm going to need some silence.
How are there gaps in this plan?
I don't know.
Comprehensive and has numbers in it.
Yeah, but be quiet now, because I'm going to need a little bit of time. I'm going to need you not to interrupt, okay? And also, there's a few different phases of play. So when I start with Neil Mope, that's just one of them, because obviously you've got that kind of floaty Neil Mope, and then you've got Neil Mope, that's Neil Mope as well, and also Neil Mope, in the 6 yard box, of course, Neil Mope. And that's Neil Mope, in with just the words Neil Mope. I feel like that's a very accurate description of how he plays. I don't think I need to use any more words to explain that. So I'll pass it on to Seb now.
Yeah, just a reminder that we're kind of coming up to award season for podcasts as well. So if anyone wants to remember and nominate that little segment when the sort of FSA voting comes up, that would be greatly appreciated.
Uh-huh. Neil Mope.
You know what? I reckon... I mean, Alex, right, there aren't any household names there at the moment. I think Yves Bissouma could become a household name at some point. I think that's a really, really good player. Like, there were his first season in English football, there were sort of a few impetuous moments. And, you know, this season he had that. I'm not even sure how you describe the kick that resulted in the red card. Like, it was something. It was like a kind of. Do you remember
it was
the
scorpion kick in the face? Wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you remember the special move from Ryu and Ken in Street Fighter 2? the sort of the spinning roundhouse. It was a little bit like that. But he looks a really, really complete midfielder. I really like him.
He's so good, isn't he?
He's so good, and also like one of the things about that Everton game. I know they lost, and. I know they conceded four times, but they were still really good on the ball. They retained possession quite well. They had a few defensive moments which weren't so great, and Rodriguez picked them apart a little bit. But they just look a little bit more mature with the ball. Like, it's not sort of they when a lot of teams are newly promoted into the Premier League, you feel like a lot of their phases are quite panicked, quite rushed, they're sort of designed around getting from south to north as quickly as possible, or back behind that, protecting their goal as quickly as possible. Brighton now seem to have the kind of like have lost whatever inferiority complex a lot of teams bring up with them when they come from the Championship. They're now just a footballing side, not as good as Everton, but at the moment on the basis of the league table, very few teams are. But just really impressive and really, really fun to watch, because there's so many little stories inside that first 11, same little sort of developing partnerships, and they're just a fascinating little subplot to the season so far.
I love them, and also Adam Lallana has been injured a lot, hasn't he? So it'd be great to see him come back into the team more too. I feel like that could really push things on in terms of clinicalness.
Yeah, I think Seb's right in terms of there are no household names there now. But, you know, you can, again, like we said with Villa to a degree, although
Ben
probably
White.
More so with Brighton. I'm not sure Ben White is a household name.
I think he is after the summer.
He was linked with clubs, but I think he was still quite an unknown quantity, because not, you know, people who pay lots and lots of attention to the Premier League don't necessarily pay attention to the Championship. I think it's quite easy to know of Ben White without realising just how good he is, but... With him, with Lamptey, Bissouma, Aaron Connolly last season was one of the best players for non-penalty XG per 90, but didn't play very often. Lewis Dunk is a very, very solid and capable defender. You know, that there are players there who, if Brighton continue to have a good season, and I think they will come better, that their results, like with the Everton game, as Seb says, you know, Everton are playing fantastically at the moment, but... Brighton should improve on the basis of how they're doing, and that will be realised in the results. If they can keep the core of that squad together, then that it is the sort of team that I think next season potentially will have players that everybody's interested in.
Or they could win the league.
Or they could win the league. And I think Seb's absolutely right. You know, Potter is a possession-based coach. He's very tactically astute as well. And he clearly has given them the confidence to play out from the back, to get these nice rotations going, to get link-up play going. That front three is really fluid and lovely to watch. as you so eloquently expressed, Joe, I think, with your Neil Mope section. So yeah, I mean, they're great. They're almost as fun to watch at the moment as Everton are.
Do you know, I just love Neil Mope so much. What was the game? Was it Arsenal? Was it Arsenal last season?
Yes,
when
it
they
was,
had
yes.
the sort of spat, and I just loved that because not that I dislike Arsenal particularly, but when there is a lot of squaring up and there's no violence and it's all kind of pantomime and body play and not body play, that sounds
that
like a
sounds
different
weird.
But what I mean is, you know, the shaping of body, the peacocking of men, you know, Neil Mope just laughed in the face of Xhaka and of several other Arsenal players. I just found it so
was Guendouzi
alluring.
Involved.
Oh, it
in
was Guendouzi. It was Guendouzi.
That was the Guendouzi game.
That was the Guendouzi game that sort of put the final nail in Guendouzi's coffin.
Right.
And
yeah.
He's now off on loan in Germany.
He was so Jack Shore about it. And I just think, I just like him. I think I want to be his friend, is what I'm saying, Neil Mope. And I will say Neil Mope more. But for now, let's move on to talk about someone who is not Neil Mope, but does have more fantasy points. It's Harry Kane. Kane is the top player in the league for actual assists and expected assists per 90. Why? What's happened?
Well, what's happened is that there's the slightly freak result against Southampton where Southampton maintained this absurdly high line and Kane just played the same pass to Son Heung-min, I think, three times, maybe even four.
I was wondering if it was more like existential than that. Has he realised that he's not going to hit Big Daddy Shearer's top number? And so he thought, I don't care anymore.
I think in terms of the way that Spurs, and Seb will probably be able to answer this better than me, but I'll have a quick stab at it. With Son and Moura, Spurs have got two very quick, strong players that can cut from outside to in. Kane has always been somebody who's quite liked dropping off, but previously would then also need to get forwards in order to finish stuff off. But, you know, for England as well, during the World Cup, him and Sterling would sort of alternate and drop off a lot and then play forwards. And it seems like this is something that Spurs have either sort of stumbled across in the course of that Southampton game or potentially considered as a likely thing. But Kane is almost playing as a bit of a 10 at times, coming really, really far deep and then using his passing ability, which I think is genuinely underrated.
Wayne Rooney.
He's always been good at passing. It's just he's been better at shooting, so that's what people used him for. But he's got this creativity, and because Spurs are looking to play forwards quickly and use the sort of the power of those two forwards cutting inside, it really naturally suits Kane's ability to set things up. And
let me ask you this, Alex, right? Let me ask you this, slightly off topic, but if you're good at shooting, you're good at passing, right? Because what's a pass? It's just a shot, but less hard.
I think to a degree there's probably some sense in that, but I think shooting is about the position. It's a lot about the position in which you find yourself or get yourself into as well. Passing is about the ability to see where somebody else is going to be. So it's not necessarily about the technique of kicking the ball, but it's
not
about
the accuracy.
Your ability to recognise either where you ought to be or where somebody else ought to be and then have the technical ability to execute those two things. But Kane's, you know, Kane's good at sort of crossfield passes. He's quite good at crossing. He's got more to him than just being a striker. And I think he's found for the time being, and this may be a good way of, you know, him conserving himself in terms of injuries and stuff. If he has to be less dynamic and less robust in the box and try and, you know, carve space out for himself against defenders or rush forwards at pace to try and get into the box on the end of opportunities, he can use his other abilities to set those players up and protect himself a little bit more.
Quite good at swearing as well, isn't he, Seb?
Really good at swearing, according to the Amazon documentary. Really, really good. Let me just add something there, because I think it's important. I think Jose Mourinho is owed a little bit of credit here, because Alex is quite right. Kane has always had this in his game. So one of the most familiar automatisms of Bettino Pochettino's football was to drop Kane into a kind of space on the touchline, left-hand side, receive the ball, and then whip a crossfield pass, a switch of play to a fullback on the other side. It was a kind of little mechanism Spurs used to kind of to change their gears, basically. What Mourinho seems to have done is, with the absence of Christian Eriksen, has gone a lack of properly penetrative passing ability. Like, they've got players that can play the same kind of position. So they've got attacking midfielders, players that can carry the ball. What they don't have is kind of the weight of pass. And so what I think Mourinho has done is just stress the need for Kane to play some of those, to fill some of those roles within a game. And to kind of, to almost moonlight between being a forward and a kind of a creative playmaker. I think the other thing that seems to have happened is that over time, Son Heung-min has been gradually encouraged forward into a central area.
He's always been like some cheese, you mean? He said that gently, like he was a little mouse.
Gently, well, because it's been gradual. Cheese. It's been gradual. It hasn't been a kind of, right, you're going to play up front. But if you look at sort of some of the shortages that Spurs have suffered over the last couple of years, so long periods without Kane where Son has had to deputise as a proper centre forward, not a false nine, an actual centre forward. As Kane has come back and as the kind of combination between them has redeveloped, Son has sort of retained a lot of the habits that he was needed to, you know, a lot of the...
That's interesting.
Well, I think so, because what you have in Son is someone that's brilliant off the left-hand side, someone that can beat players, that can cut in onto his stronger foot, but also someone that carries the ball at great speed. Because there is a difference between a player being quick and a player being able to carry the ball quickly. And Son is both, and a very skillful player, a very two-footed player. And so Mourinho seems to have created a sort of a Swiss Army knife of a centre-forward out of him. Whilst utilising the best parts of the two, you know, really important parts of Kane's game, which are obviously his goal scoring, but also his pivot play and playmaking. And it's not an accident. There are still issues elsewhere in that side. Obviously, we're recording this a couple of days before Gareth Bale will probably make his second debut, so we'll see what that brings. But potentially, this is as good a attacking unit as there'll be in the country within a couple of months, I think.
Do you know what, as well, Son's growth over years has just been a delight to watch, hasn't it? You feel like he just keeps getting better over a much longer period than you would expect a player to continue improving, do you know?
Yeah, when he first came, I didn't really like him. I mean, I liked him as a footballer, but his attitude wasn't quite right. He actually wanted to leave Tottenham at the end of his first season. Pochettino persuaded him otherwise. And his application and his willingness to work hard has improved immeasurably, because one of the criticisms of him was he wasn't always defensively aware. Now, whether that was a kind of a mental issue or a physical one, I'm not quite sure. But whatever it is, he's fixed it so that he is now, you know, playing him used to be you play him at the expense of something happening potentially. So if you played him off the left hand side, you probably exposed back then Danny Rose to the odd numerical mismatch, perhaps. Now you feel that, barring a couple of strange moments here and there, you feel he's a much more complete footballer. And he's actually a better one, technically. I think if you talk to people who watched him in the Bundesliga, they would probably say that he was very patchy. He wasn't consistent. He wasn't reliable. He went missing in big games from time to time. And that was certainly true at the beginning of his Tottenham career too. He was a bit of a no-show at grounds at Old Trafford and the Emirates. As time has gone on, that's changed. So now, with probably the exception of Harry Kane, if Tottenham are to score a big goal, it's going to come from Son Heung-min. And that's a sea change in his profile as a player, I think.
Yeah. But listen, that's the end of today's podcast. There were three other suggestions that Alex made ahead of today, and I'd love to do this again next time there's an international break. I believe that's not too far away either. I think there's one in November.
November the 7th to the 21st.
Okay, cool. So in about a month we can come back, at which point I would love to discuss Patrick Bamford, Jared Bowen and Callum Wilson, all players I think worthy of this conversation. But for now, it's just to say thank you to you, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to you, Seb.
Thank you very much, Joe.
A quick reminder to the listener that I am winning the the fantasy football so far, and am actually a better person and
a better person. We've gone from good at fantasy football to just a better person.
Perhaps even just sort of more broadly admired, and you know, just I would say, you know, more enjoyed by other people. I don't know if I'm going too far to say that, but I think, listen, that's all I want to say is leave you with that thought. I'm the best, and I'll be back later this week with next week with another thing as part of which I will probably also be the best.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.